Hi everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Tariffs and trade tensions resurfaced at the end of last week, and the result was S&P 500 falling 2.7% on Friday. The decline interrupted a rally that had taken the S&P 500's year-to-date rise to more than 15%. The prospect of more trade uncertainty, the ongoing government shutdown, and the start of quarter three earnings season are all things that investors have to grapple at the start of this new week. Here to discuss all of this is Jason Dreho, head of Asset Allocation Americas. Jason, let's get started. We'll start with the latest developments on U.S.-China trade. What happened and where do things go from here?
Well, it's been an eventful, say, 3 or 4 days. It began with last Thursday, China announcing stricter export controls on rare earth minerals. That led to President Trump announcing on Friday additional measures, including a 100% tariff on all imports from China, effective November 1st, and export controls on critical software. So what had been a relatively, you know, sort of calm truce, you know, for a number of months, you know, maybe uneasy, but that suddenly, you know, erupted in the last week. President Trump also said that he would consider canceling a planned meeting with, you know, President Xi of China at the APEC summit in early November. That's where things left on end of Friday, but there was de-escalation of tensions over the weekend. On Sunday, the China signals a softer stance through a statement from the Ministry of Commerce that came out on Sunday, saying that the export controls are not a ban. Your compliant non-military rare earth exports will be approved, and its new rare earth policy was a reaction to additional U.S. restrictions instead of a proactive escalation. Shortly after that statement was put out, President Trump posted on social media, don't worry about China, it will be fine. And he also clarified comments that he still plans to meet President Xi at the end of October, beginning of November. Also, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and the Vice Premier of China, Lefeng, are also potentially going to meet in Frankfurt in a couple of weeks. So some signs of de-escalation. We can see the market's going to respond, and at least U.S. futures markets responding favorably as of Monday morning. How to sort of interpret these kind of, you know, this escalation? You know, it's certainly possible that both sides are trying to get set the table, you know, get some leverage ahead of the negotiations that will take place over the next month. Given that the current, you know, tariff pause expires on November 10th, so this could also just be, you know, a negotiating tactic leading up to the potential extension. Ultimately, we still think a full-scale trade war between China and the U.S. is unlikely, and both countries are going to seek some sort of concessions and want to avoid a disruptive trade dispute with one another. So it's in neither side's economic interest to see this escalate. But of course, both sides want to get the best possible deal they can. So it's understandable that these tensions potentially kind of flare up. You know, things that you need to kind of watch for between now and the end of the month is confirmation of a meeting between President Trump and President Xi. Maybe clearer definitions of what is critical software, you know, what sort of exemptions could take place, any other semiconductor-related tariffs under Section 232 could be key things to watch. But at least from the moment right now, it does seem like the escalation of tensions on Thursday and Friday have de-escalated to some extent on Monday morning. But this could be sort of the backdrop and sort of tension points that continue to exist for the next month until we get either a further extension of this pause, which is likely, or some sort of escalation in about a month from now.
The market reacted negatively to the news, but S&P 500 futures are pointing higher this morning. Was Friday just a small speed bump in this climb higher, or was it a warning that there will be more volatility ahead?
Well, as you mentioned at the outset, the S&P 500 was down at 2.7% on Friday. The NASDAQ was down even more at 3.5%. It was a fairly kind of classic risk-off day. The 10-year Treasury yield fell 8 basis points. The 2-year yield fell 6 basis points. Gold rose 1% as a kind of a risk-off hedge, although the dollar did decline 60 basis points, kind of reflecting the fact that as a safe haven, the dollar's attractiveness has been diminished to some extent, and effectively gold is benefiting from a kind of a de-dollarization trade overall. What's also interesting is, you know, this kind of in the context of a lot of chatter in recent weeks about the potential for a market bubble, things that we're getting signs of speculation, worried about, you know, whether the AI investment that's sort of driving much of the markets, you know, will this actually be ultimately warranted by earnings down the line? And there was definitely some signs of more speculation in the markets, you know, little pockets of froth here and there, you know, feeding to this fuel, or feed into the concerns about a potential bubble forming. What we saw on Friday was a little bit of air coming out of the pockets, so to speak. In addition to the overall equity markets down being quite a bit, if you look at certain parts of the market, like unprofitable tech stocks, baskets of these were down 8%. AI tech beneficiaries were down 5.5%. Things that are more speculative, fell quite a bit. Cryptocurrencies, declined ultimately over the course of the weekend, upwards of 10%+. In addition, volatility that had been relatively contained, it also spiked on Friday. The VIX volatility index for equities was up 5.5%. The ratio should be closer to 1-for-1, meaning the S&P was up or down 2.7%. The VIX would be down about 3. So you saw kind of a bigger surge in volatility. Again, consistent with perhaps some signs that investors have become a bit complacent or volatility been suppressed because investors are using futures or options to get the upside exposure, less worried about some sort of downside. So that was a little bit of the air out of kind of the bubble narrative came out on Friday. That's not a bad thing. It's probably a healthy development. But if we continue to get sort of unexpected developments on the policy front, a longer U.S. government shutdown than expected, further escalations in U.S.-China trade tensions, or at least the de-escalation doesn't actually hold, all these things could add to the sort of more kind of volatility in the marketplace, at least in the near term, especially since the market's been on a pretty much straight line higher for the last 6 months, and especially over the last 6 weeks or so.
The third quarter earnings season starts this week, and in the absence of government data, the results could take on even greater significance than normal. What are you expecting from the results?
Well, the main earnings season starts on Tuesday, the 14th, and it'll be led by financials, as is typical. And this week, we will get about 12% of the S&P 500 market cap reporting, dominated by banks and by financials overall. Going into the earnings season, consensus analysts kind of forecasts expect a deceleration from a really strong Q2, where there was 11% year-over-year earnings growth for the S&P 500, up to falling down to 8% in the year-over-year in the third quarter. One interesting aspect about this earnings season, or at least coming into it, is that there was very little cut in kind of the bottom-up analyst expectations for the earnings season. Typically, if you take from in this case, July 1st through the earnings season until companies start reporting in mid-October, during that sort of typical 3.5-month period, analysts will ultimately kind of cut their expectations in aggregate for the S&P 500 by about 3 or 4 percentage points. But since the start of the third quarter, the third quarter earnings estimates are basically flatlined, meaning there's no real cut in the earnings expectations over the last 3 months. Now, also in the context, the way that kind of the pattern works is that analysts end up cutting their expectations around 3-ish%. Companies ultimately beat by 3-4%, and so relative to where consensus was as of let's say July 1, the number often is that they beat the companies ultimately beat by 1%, but 3-4% relative to the revised expectations. So right now, we just now had that down revision. That does leave maybe some concern about the bar is now higher. Typically, it declines. And if it's higher, there's more scope for disappointment. But it is the case that, the lack of downward revisions doesn't necessarily, isn't a negative sign. It's actually often more often than not sort of a bullish sign. So basically, in the last 25 years, the median S&P 500 company earnings per share beat estimates by up to around 5% on average, when there was no kind of downgrade and revisions versus the typical beat of about 3%. So bottom line, the lack of cut over the last 3 months is actually historically kind of a bullish sign for the earnings season. Obviously, time will tell when you see the data, but also guidance for Q4 over the past month, or the past couple of months has been modest. It's no real cuts thus far. So we're setting up between the lack of downgrades for Q3, the lack of downgrades so far for Q4, and it's still very early, suggests that the earnings season for Q3 and also ultimately the kind of the guidance for Q4 could be relatively constructive for equities. And we'll start to get more information beginning on Tuesday.
So we are coming to the end of our conversation, Jason, and I want to discuss investment recommendations. Given all that's going on, what should investors be doing right now?
Well, we saw on Friday, this is kind of a little bit of a speed bump for equities. It is a reminder that there are some risks out there and that investors shouldn't get too complacent. But ultimately, if and indeed this was a bit of an escalation, now de-escalation in the course of, you know, two business days, and we see equity futures going higher, that ultimately kind of reinforces our view that, you know, the bull market for equities is intact. There'll be some hiccups every now and then. Pullbacks represent an opportunity for investors who are underallocated equities to add some long-term exposure. You know, given the sell-off on Friday of being down, you know, 2.7% for the S&P, and a bounce back this morning, you know, could be like futures indicate about 1%. That's not exactly a major pullback, but, you know, the bigger picture point being that pullbacks are an opportunity to kind of add exposure. One of the areas that we like is financials and banks, specifically in financials, and we will get companies reporting this week that will give some of that guidance. And so there's certainly scope for our view is correct in terms of how they're performing, how they will perform in an environment where the economy is holding up, and, you know, some tailwinds from sort of deregulation. We expect them to kind of be outperformers, and that could be kind of given a bit of a bounce this week, especially because banks and financials have underperformed the markets at least a little bit over the past, you know 2 to 3 weeks. You know, technology and AI continues to remain a key theme. The fact that, you know, there was a bit of de-escalation of trade tension sort of reinforces the view that there's only so much that either side, you know, the U.S. or China wants to engage in terms of restricting, you know, the flow of technology, because AI is a critical area for now for both governments. And part of that thesis, you know, and that view is that we need to maintain a kind of a balanced view of the overall AI kind of technology stack, from enabling to intelligence to application layers. And we have a positive view on both the prospects for U.S. and China tech over the medium term. So corrections like we saw on Friday, these would be opportunities to potentially add exposure if you are underallocated. In terms of fixed income, we have a preference for higher quality, especially securitized credit over corporate credit. There has been some pockets of stress in credit markets with you know, high profile defaults for First Friends, for Tricolor. It is highlighting the fact that spreads are very tight. There is, you know, decent credit risk out there, not elevated, but, you know, decent credit risk. And it doesn't appear to be that, at least when it comes to corporate credit, investors are getting fully compensated for that. So overall, we're sort of tilted towards, you know, higher quality fixed income, more prevalent in securitized credit where the spreads are a little bit wider. And sort of therefore, I think investors are getting a little more compensated for that risk that they're taking. And then gold continues to be a good diversifier in its performance on Friday in this risk-off environment, where gold rallied when the dollar fell. That is consistent with the idea that gold can, you know, provide a good, you know, diversification in these broader sort of, you know, risk-off periods, but also on a longer-term basis, as investors globally look to try and reduce exposure to dollar in particular. Gold is one of the key beneficiaries, so we think it will continue to have a strong tailwind, you know, going into the rest of this year and into 2026.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jason.
Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.